Hey, everybody, we made it. It's Friday, March 22nd. You're listening to the Mo News Podcast. I'm Moshe Wanunu.
And I'm Jill Wagner. This is the place where we bring you just the facts.
And we read all the news and read between the lines so you don't have to. That is, unless one of us, Jill, tonight wins Mega Millions.
Fair warning, if I win, I'm out. You'll probably never hear from me again.
So if she doesn't show up on Monday, folks, it's either she's under the weather or she's a billionaire, because Mega Millions tonight is a $1 billion drawing. But don't worry, if you don't win Mega Millions tonight, Powerball also getting up there. The next Powerball drawing tomorrow night, Saturday night, for $750 million, which I still think, Jill, if you win Powerball, you're probably not showing up either.
Correct, Moshe. I'm done.
All right.
It's been a good run.
It's been a good run. Let us know. The odds are still, while there's many members of the Mo News community, still stacked against us for a winner here, but wanted to give you guys a heads up because we all like to dream about, you know, a one followed by nine zeros.
Okay, let's get to some news. The government crackdown on big tech continues, this time with a major lawsuit against Apple. Speaking of Apple, the Dirty Dozen, which fruits and veggies had the highest levels of pesticides, and why this is actually turning into a major controversy.
You guys have many thoughts about this list, some for, some against, and we'll bring it all to you in this podcast.
Speaking of controversial, to the Middle East, the U.S. Secretary of State is back in the region. What he is saying about a potential ceasefire deal and what the U.S. is doing to get Americans out of Haiti. The Wall Street stocks hit record highs on Thursday, and Reddit had a blockbuster IPO.
Jill, the tweet from the Reddit founder, Alex Ohanian, "We did it, Mom."
Aw. Alexis Ohanian, by the way, Mr. Serena Williams, married to Serena. In health news, a medical milestone, surgeons transplanted a kidney from a pig into a human. And why some doctors say you should be wearing shoes in the house.
But not the shoes you were wearing outside, like, for the record.
Plus, Downton Abbey could be back in some capacity, we'll explain. And it is Friday. Cheers to the freaking weekend, what we are watching, reading, and eating.
If you're following us on Instagram, you know what we're eating. Here's your clue.
Okay, let's start with some tech news, as the U.S. government is now trying to take on a few of the largest companies in the world. The latest target, Apple. The Justice Department and 16 state attorneys general sued Apple on Thursday. They are accusing the company of violating antitrust laws by using its power over app distribution on the iPhone to prevent innovation and keep a monopoly on the smartphone market. The federal lawsuit comes after a five-year investigation. Apple has 64%, or about two-thirds of the U.S. market share for U.S. smartphones versus 18% for Samsung. The Justice Department claims that Apple has used anti-competitive tactics like blocking innovative new apps and degrading how Android messages appear on iPhones as a way to keep its stranglehold on the smartphone market. The lawsuit also says that Apple limits third-party digital wallets and non-Apple smartwatches. For years, critics have said that Apple's App Store harms competition with its high fees and technology. Here is the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, talking about the impact of this on consumers.
Consumers should not have to pay higher prices because companies break the law. We allege that Apple has consolidated its monopoly power, not by making its own products better, but by making other products worse. iPhone users perceive rival smartphones as being lower quality because the experience of messaging friends and family who do not own iPhones is worse, even though Apple is the one responsible for breaking cross-platform messaging.
Apple responding to the lawsuit saying, "The lawsuit threatens who we are and the principles that set Apple products apart in fiercely competitive markets. If successful, it would hinder our ability to create the kind of technology people expect from Apple, where hardware, software, and services intersect. It would also set a dangerous precedent, empowering government to take a heavy hand in designing people's technology. We believe this lawsuit is wrong on the facts and the law, and we will vigorously defend against it."
Yeah, Apple is asking everyone to zoom out a little bit, saying the smartphone market is global. And while they represent two-thirds of smartphones in the U.S., globally, Apple's market share is just 20%. And they've made the case for years that what's called this walled garden is convenient for users, right? Your MacBook, your iPhone, your Apple TV, your iWatch, they all talk to each other. But the issue is they don't talk to other manufacturers or don't talk to them very well. Think about when you text message somebody between an iPhone and an Android phone and it shows up green and the video is small and the photos are small. Well, what the US government's saying is Apple does that on purpose to try to ensure that you get everyone around you to just get Apple devices. That it's not about security, which is what Apple says here, that you know, can keep your information secure in this closed environment, but making things so difficult for consumers to force them again to buy Apple products. And it has paid off royally for Apple. They are nearly a $3 trillion company, one of the three or four biggest companies in the entire world. And so the US government here, albeit a bit belatedly, is taking aim at these big tech companies. Of course, Apple here, it's not the first attempt at Apple, but the biggest one. But in the last year, we've told you about the various suits that have been filed against Amazon, that have been filed against Google, as the government plays catch up here on these companies that have become multi-trillion dollar companies. The lawsuit here against Apple, very well researched. It includes internal communications where you have senior Apple executives acknowledging that if you improve how Apple communicates through third-party apps or allows your iPhone to talk better to an Android device, that that would actually give an incentive for people to actually get their kids Android devices, not something they want. We should note that users over the years, many of them have been asking for improvement in how Apple devices talk to Android devices. Developers have gone so far as to create apps that can circumvent the platform limitations. Apple has shut them all down. In the lawsuit, there's also a quote from Tim Cook, the Apple CEO, mentioned, where he's confronted at one point about the lackluster Android to iPhone communication. His response, buy your mom an iPhone.
He took heat for that comment when he said it, especially given that iPhones are expensive. They're like $1,600 at this point.
And that's the point the government makes here, is that Apple has effectively created a situation for consumers where they have to spend more than $1,000 on a phone because it's the only way they can communicate with their mom, or their mom needs one to communicate with them. Apple, for their part, says that the messages were, quote, taken out of context and they have done nothing wrong. Jill, this is reminding several folks about the famous Justice Department lawsuits against Microsoft in the 90s, where they eventually forced Microsoft to unbundle Internet Explorer. Remember Internet Explorer? From the Windows operating system. And that's the issue they took with Microsoft in the 80s and 90s, is they effectively forced consumers into their entire ecosystem. Now, eventually, they split that apart. One of the beneficiaries of it, Apple. The creation of iTunes and other programming came as a result of the breaking apart there of the Microsoft conglomerate, or at least were helped by it. Now, I wouldn't expect anything anytime soon, given all the lawyers here, the amount of money, appeals. This is probably a multi-year effort, and that also assumes that if Biden's reelected or if Trump wins, that they'll continue that. But that is something that you see more and more in Washington, is Republicans and Democrats agreeing that big tech has gotten too big. The question is this lawsuit the right approach, and will a judge agree with the government here or agree with Apple?
Speaking of apples, kind of, now to a story that has been quite controversial and led to heated debates and a few threats on our Instagram account. And no, we are not talking about the Middle East.
Or the royal family, Jill. Those are the two topics where the debates have gotten most heated on Instagram this week.
And with the royal family, it's what? People saying, who cares?
Who cares? Leave her alone versus this is really important and we have to get to the bottom of it.
Okay, so this is about the new Dirty Dozen list from the Environmental Working Group, or the EWG. The Environmental and Health Advocacy Organization has come out with its 2024 report on which produce has the most amount of pesticide residue. It's nicknamed the Dirty Dozen. Top of the list this year, strawberries, spinach, kale, grapes, peaches, pears, nectarines, apples, bell and hot peppers, cherries, blueberries, and green beans. So the way this works is that staffers at the USDA wash and peel fruits and veggies as they expect that people at home would do. And then they're tested for more than 250 different pesticides. For 2024, researchers from EWG examined the testing data on more than 47,000 samples of 46 non-organic fruits and vegetables, with the majority of testing from the USDA.
Now, about 70% of the non-organic produce tested by the USDA and FDA have pesticide levels within the legal limits allowed by the EPA, according to the EWG. This is quite an alphabet soup of acronyms here, folks. But the USDA, FDA, government agencies, testing them for legal limits by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, And this is all in the Environmental Working Group, the independent report. Now, some of the critics of this report say that the dose makes the poison, not its just general presence or its absence, and that the dose determines the potential for harm here. So in many cases, despite the fact that you see this headline, the Dirty Dozen, and pesticides on these various fruits and vegetables, what critics argue is that if you actually look at the level of dose here, you'd have to be exposed to a million times more than what you're exposed to before you would see any effects. And this is where it gets controversial, right? Because ultimately, the EWG and the people around them say, listen, just because that this is the legal limit, according to the government right now, doesn't mean that that legal limit is safe. You know, over time, legal limits get changed and updated. The critics of the EWG on the other side, who don't like this Dirty Dozen report, say that the EWG is funded by the organic produce lobby. So they have an agenda. There's a group of scientists, members of the Society of Toxicology, who apparently don't think very highly of the EWG. But again, the EWG then responds saying, well, at the same time, the U.S. government is heavily influenced and lobbied by the farm lobby and petrochemical companies who are making these pesticides. So here at the Mo News podcast, we tell you to pick your fighter in this battle between these two sides. Now, again, there's legitimate critiques of both here. We just want to bring it to you because it's been hotly contested. Jill, I've heard from the hosts of the Unbiased Science podcast, and we're looking to have them on the pod soon.
Oh, that would be great.
They're among the critics of the EWG, but still, it's notable here because at the end of the day, even as we talk about many of these fruits and vegetables having under the legal limit in the number of pesticides, pesticides have been linked to a variety of studies related to preterm births, as well as genetic damage and other hormone-connected issues in people, low sperm concentrations, as well as other disorders. Again, there are people here with various views on the various studies, but that is one of the reasons why the folks at the EWG and others will urge the purchase, if possible, if affordable, organic produce.
The group is also out with its Clean 15, a list of produce with the least amount of trace pesticides. Avocados, sweet corn, pineapples, onions, and papayas led that list. Also frozen sweet peas, asparagus, honeydew melons, kiwis, cabbage, watermelons, mushrooms, mangoes, sweet potatoes, and carrots. But Moshe, again, that list sparking quite the conversation over on the Mo News Instagram account.
Yeah, and we should note, Jill, when you went through that list of Clean 15, one thing that many of them have in common is thick skins, right? The avocados, the melons, the watermelons, the mangoes, etc. Whereas the fruit we're talking about in the Dirty Dozen, the strawberries, the blueberries, the apples have a much thinner skin. So one thing they urge all around is just to make sure you're washing your produce effectively under cold water, that you're running it, then drying it with a paper towel. Now, you shouldn't use soap or detergent. The CDC recommends against that.
Don't put it in the washing machine.
Don't put it in the one. No, none of the nonsense we were up to in the early COVID days with the Lysol wipes on the fruit or whatever. The point is, wash, especially with fruit like that, you know, give it a good rinse to get some stuff off of it, regardless of where you fall on the EWG Dirty Dozen debate here. Though there have been studies that, you know, again, this is not all organic fruit, but some organic fruit does ensure that you're getting less pesticides, though pesticides are certainly used on organic produce as well. But the cleaning is an important thing here. And I do hope that some of the people engaging the debate, Jill, will be able to make amends. Otherwise, we'll turn the comments off for this like we have for Israel and Palestine. I kid. Have it out, everybody.
All right. Plenty of news coming up, but we want to first thank a couple of our sponsors this week, starting with Factor Meal. We are definitely pressed for time, especially in my house, and still want to eat healthy and nutritious meals. So that's why we are so excited about Factor, America's number one ready-to-eat meal delivery service. They can help you fuel up fast for breakfast, lunch, and dinner with chef-prepared and dietitian-approved ready-to-eat meals delivered straight to your door. And you get to skip that extra trip to the grocery store, the shopping, the prepping, and my least favorite part, the cleaning up, while still getting the flavor and nutritional quality that you need. Factor's fresh, never-frozen meals are ready in just 2 minutes, so all you've got to do is heat and enjoy. You could choose from over 35 weekly meals. It is flexible for your schedule. You can get as many or as few as you need by choosing between 6 and 18 meals per week. You could also pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. They also have my favorite, cold-pressed juices, shakes, and smoothies. Ready in just 2 minutes, no prep, no mess. Head to factormeals.com/monews550 and use that code monews50 to get 50% off. Again, that is code monews50 at factormeals.com to get 50% off. Great deal, Moshe.
And we want to thank another great partner for us here at Mo News, Athletic Greens. We're always talking about health trends, nutritional trends, how hard it is to get all of your vitamins. Well, one way we have found to get all the important ones here is Athletic Greens AG1 powder. I first tried it almost 2 years ago now as I was trying various vitamins after meeting with a nutritionist. And what I love about AG1, it's just one scoop with a glass of water in the morning. It's easy, it's quick. It lets you get on with your day knowing you've gotten more than 75 important ingredients, tons of vitamins and minerals, pre and probiotics for your gut and for digestion. It's effectively a nutritional insurance policy as you begin your day. And they have a great deal right now for the Mo News community. With your first purchase of AG1, Athletic Greens is giving Mo News listeners a free 1 year supply of vitamin D, 5 free travel packs of AG1 for you to take on the go. It is really easy. Just head over to drinkag1.com/monews. That is drinkag1.com/monews. That's where you can just try just once or get a discounted monthly subscription. Again, drinkag1.com/monews for this special deal and to start to take ownership of your health.
All right, time for the speed read. Now to the Middle East from Reuters. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is in Israel today. It is the next stop on his latest visit to the region since the Hamas attacks on October 7th. On Thursday, he said that he believed that talks in Qatar could still reach a Gaza ceasefire agreement. In Cairo on Thursday, Blinken met Arab foreign ministers and Egypt's president, al-Sisi. The talks in Qatar centered on a truce of around 6 weeks that would allow the release of 40 Israeli hostages in return for hundreds of Palestinians detained in Israeli jails. Blinken said, quote, negotiators continue to work. He says we have closed the gaps in terms of the differences in what the sides want, but there are still gaps, so I cannot put a timeline on it. I can just say that we are committed to doing everything possible to reach an agreement. The main sticking point in ceasefire talks has been that Hamas says that it will release hostages only as part of a deal that would end the war, while Israel says that it will discuss only a temporary pause. If you're reading the tea leaves, Moshe, perhaps a potential good sign would be that Israel is sending its spy chief, David Barnea, back to Qatar on Friday to meet with negotiators. So maybe a sign that they feel like there is progress to be made.
Yeah, Barnea has been involved in the talks for a while here, but they've pulled him home again. They sent them back again. They have seen much more effective communication with the head of the CIA, the head of the Mossad, the intel chiefs, as opposed to the politicians here.
I wonder why.
Less politics, more like, this is what we know. This is what we can do. But still, I mean, we're now 3 months in to these negotiations and they're edging closer, but still ongoing. And they haven't reached a deal here.
One of the other things that's apparently slowing it down is that it's hard to get an answer from Hamas in Gaza.
Yeah.
It could take a few days for them to deliver a message and get it back.
Jill, it comes as we're watching a number of important meetings next week between the U.S. and Israel. The Israeli Secretary of Defense has been invited by U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin to the Pentagon next week. Yoav Gallant, the Israeli leader there, they'll be discussing the state of the war as well as the Israeli game plan for going into Rafah, the huge city in the south. The U.S. has been pushing back against this, so has most of the rest of the world, saying there's 1.5 million displaced Palestinian civilians there. The Israelis saying that about a quarter of Hamas leadership remains there, as well as the remaining 100-plus hostages underground there. So that's something key we'll be watching as far as what's going on the ground right now in Gaza. Israel has continued its attack on Al-Shifa Hospital. You might remember that hospital from earlier in the war. Israel is now back, saying that it has found dozens of Hamas and Islamic Jihad gunmen who were holed up in the building. The Hamas side pushing back on the allegations, though the Israelis say that they have found, quote, very significant Hamas officers now using that facility again. Keep in mind, there's also thousands of displaced civilians who are in the hospital there. So that's been closely watched over the last few days. The Israeli military saying they're evacuating patients, several hundred patients, to another building in the complex. Keep in mind, people are holed up both inside the facility, outside, and the surrounding area of Al-Shifa Hospital. As for the humanitarian crisis, we continue to watch that after the headlines we've been telling you about this week. Still a major shortage of food and water in certain areas, specifically in the north there in Gaza. Jill, we went deeper into the situation, especially the U.S.-Israel relationship, what's next for the war, with Axios reporter Barak Ravid. We made that available earlier in the week to the premium listeners. It is now available to everyone on Mo News, The Interview, our newest podcast we launched this week. So if you're interested in a deeper dive into the state of play there, check that out over on our sister, we call it a sister podcast, brother podcast, Mo News, The Interview.
A cousin.
It's a cousin of this year's podcast.
Okay, now to another serious story here, an update on Americans stuck in Haiti. From Reuters, the U.S. government is chartering helicopter flights to carry American citizens from the Haitian capital, Port-au-Prince, amid rising violence. The State Department says the first flight transporting more than 15 people to Santo Domingo in the Dominican Republic happened on Wednesday. A department spokesperson estimates that more than 30 U.S. citizens a day would be able to leave Haiti on multiple helicopter flights.
The number of Americans who have filled out an online form asking for information about departing Haiti has now surpassed 1,600. So it rings familiar if you remember the evacuations from Afghanistan a couple of years ago as the U.S. was withdrawing. They had an online form literally saying, if you're here, we might not know about it. Please let us know. And please let us know if you need to get out. Heavily armed groups, you know, we've been calling them gangs, but they're really militias at this point, Jill, have taken over much of the capital of Port-au-Prince. There's been widespread kidnapping, sexual violence, in some cases killings. Now, while it's quieter in other parts of the country, the capital has really been the center, the epicenter of the fighting. And as it comes, as the Haitian Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, has offered to resign here, but not immediately, not until a provisional government has taken over. That's something the U.S., Caribbean countries are working on. And that's been a huge point of contention here, because despite him saying he's going to resign, he still is officially the unelected prime minister of Haiti.
Some medical news from the New York Times. Surgeons in Boston have transplanted a kidney from a genetically engineered pig into a sick 62-year-old man. It is the first procedure of its kind. If successful, this breakthrough offers hope to hundreds of thousands of Americans whose kidneys have failed. So far, the signs are promising. Kidneys remove waste products and excess fluid from the blood. The new kidney began producing urine shortly after the surgery last weekend, and the patient's condition continues to improve. This is according to physicians at Massachusetts General Hospital, also known as Mass General. He is already walking the halls of the hospital and could be discharged soon. The patient is a Black man, and the procedure may have special significance for Black patients who suffer high rates of end-stage kidney disease. A new source of kidneys could solve an intractable problem in the field, the inadequate access of minority patients to kidney transplants. One doctor saying that if kidneys from genetically modified animals can be transplanted on a large scale, dialysis potentially would become obsolete.
Yeah, that's the dream here, because over 800,000 Americans have kidney failure and require dialysis. That's a procedure that filters the toxins from the blood because your kidneys can no longer do it. Over 100,000 are on a waiting list right now to receive a transplanted kidney from a living or dead human donor. In addition to that, tens of millions of Americans have chronic kidney disease, which can lead to organ failure. The issue is there's just not enough kidneys on this registry for all the people who need them. So while dialysis in the interim can keep people alive, the gold standard is organ transplant. But right now, given the numbers, thousands of patients die annually while waiting for that organ transplant. Just 25,000 kidney transplants are performed each year. And again, we're talking about more than 800,000 people who suffer from kidney failure. Enter animal kidneys here, what they call xenotransplantation, the implantation of an animal's organ into a human. There have been versions of it for decades, proposed as a potential solution here that could make kidneys much more widely available. But it's run into some issues, and they're trying to improve it. We told you recently about two men who received heart transplants from pigs. Both died within months of those transplants. But in this case, in this specific kidney case, they believe that the pig kidney could work for at least 2 years here. And if it fails, this patient can go back on dialysis. That unlike the patients who got the pig hearts, that this particular patient is actually, in the words of the doctor, quite robust. So right now, what science is working on is gene editing and cloning that have tried to improve and taken out issues in the animal organs so they can be used in humans, though it does have its fair share of critics here. in particular, some of the people against it are animal rights advocates, as well as people who are concerned that introducing organs from animals into humans could introduce new pathogens, new diseases into humans. So that's something that various experts are warning about as well.
Some business news from the Wall Street Journal. Reddit shares soared in their stock market debut Thursday, an endorsement for the social media company whose users fueled the meme stocks craze. Reddit shares closed up 48% Thursday as the social media company made its foray into public markets. After pricing its IPO at $34 on Wednesday night, Reddit saw shares open at $47. They traded up as much as 70% in the session, reaching nearly $58 during the day. The closing level was just over $50. Reddit is known for its oftentimes irreverent message boards and Ask Me Anything digital town halls. It has invited thousands of its most loyal users to buy shares in its IPO, which was a risky move that added pressure on Reddit and its bankers for the stock to perform well.
Yeah, and at that $50 closing yesterday, it is more than $8 billion company now. That's the valuation based on that share price. So it bears watching here in the coming days and weeks. And it's not the only big IPO this week, initial public offering. We saw Astera Labs go public this week. It rose more than 70% in its debut on Wednesday. And the belief here is that these openings could encourage companies that have been sort of waiting out the market here and not going public to decide to go public and start selling their shares. At the same time, though, as you often see the debates about stocks happen on Reddit, they are debating the Reddit stock on Reddit. The early success as a publicly traded company is in the face of certain opinions from some of its more vocal users. Some users over at the Wall Street Bets message board that got a lot of attention a couple years ago as people drove up the prices of various companies there, like GameStop and others and AMC. They're calling for traders to sell Reddit or short it. The posters on the Wall Street Bets message board saying that the company remains unprofitable and they don't have high hopes for it as a publicly traded stock. So we'll see how Reddit stock does, how the debate about the Reddit stock on Reddit does right now, just in terms of numbers. Reddit has 73 million daily users, about 800 million in revenue, which is not insignificant, but pales in comparison to other social media platforms where the users are in the hundreds of millions or in the fact of Instagram or Facebook, billions of users.
Also want to mention that all of the big three indexes, the Dow, the NASDAQ, and the S&P closed at record highs on Thursday, despite that antitrust lawsuit against Apple that we mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. All right, Moshe, now to potentially another controversial story from Time. The health benefits of wearing shoes in the house. Over the past few years, there has been a significant increase in people experiencing foot pain, according to a podiatrist in Maryland. And she thinks that it is a rise in remote work that is at least partly to blame.
Yeah, we haven't been walking around barefoot this long since the Cro-Magnon days back in the day, Jill.
So people who work remotely tend to underestimate the amount of time that they spend walking around barefoot during the day, from cooking to cleaning or just walking up and down the stairs. And hard floors, unlike padded carpets, don't offer any support or shock absorption. So if you're barefoot, only your fat pad, as it's called, the thin layer of fat located under the ball of the foot and the heel.
I've never heard it referred to as the fat pad. That's what you have on your foot?
I don't even feel comfortable saying it.
Well, you just did, Jill. Let's refrain for the rest of the pod. Yeah.
Okay, so again, only your pad absorbs that repetitive impact of the wood floor of a hard floor. Putting pressure on your feet by walking around barefoot for weeks or months could then cause them to become inflamed, which can lead to serious problems. And then consider all the opportunities for tripping over or running into stuff, causing injuries. There is a solution, though, to the aches, strains, and even stress factors, though it is not one that patients like to hear. Start wearing shoes inside.
Or slippers, right? Are they okay with slippers?
It all depends, Moshe.
If the slippers give an appropriate amount of comfort to your fat pad on the bottom of your foot.
Exactly.
I'll say it so you don't have to. So obviously when you hear shoes in the house, people are like, whoa, I don't need you wearing shoes in the house. But there's an alternative. And it was shown to us from a young age when we watched Mr. Rogers on PBS. you have indoor shoes, right? He would always come in singing his song, saying hello to everyone, changing from his outdoor shoes to his indoor shoes on Mr. Rogers. And I guess you could do the same thing. So you don't have to wear your outdoor shoes with all the dirt, the allergens, everything you pick up, especially in New York City on the streets. And so you keep a pair of indoor shoes, a pair of outdoor shoes. As far as the pair of indoor shoes, you can go with the shoes. You can go with the slippers. Jill, I feel like I'm hearing my grandmother. I'm hearing my mom here. I'm hearing my wife here, who's like, they're always like, put on socks, put on your slippers. Because I have a tendency to walk around barefoot because I have a lot of trust in my fat pad on the bottom of my foot. But the problem is I like stub my toes and stuff. So I feel like they're right. And this story will reinforce to me the importance of covering my foot for both warmth, but also, it appears, for the health of my foot to prevent a podiatry visit sometime in the future.
There are a couple of rules of thumb that this article talked about. They say that in terms of shoes, you do want something that has support. So if you could bend a shoe completely in half, it's not going to work. It's time to get a better, stronger pair of shoes. And as for slippers, which we mentioned, like the fuzzy kind that are cute and designed to keep your feet warm, probably not providing a lot of support. Mm. I actually do have indoor shoes, which is the reason that this story
really resonated with you.
Yeah. If you're wondering why I included it in the podcast, I have a pair of indoor Crocs.
Yeah.
They're amazing. They're so comfortable. They're fur lined or whatever.
You have boots with the fur. You have Crocs with the fur. Yeah.
Exactly. They're great. And I will say my feet really do start to hurt if I'm not wearing them.
Jill, you're making a great case. I think if you have a company that makes indoor shoes, it looks like Jill is ready to endorse you here on this podcast.
You know what, Moshe? We should see if there's any indoor shoes swag that we could put the Mo News label on.
Maybe we'll add it to the merch shop. We're going to get the folks working on it.
And finally, from the BBC, a third and final Downton Abbey movie is in the pipeline, at least according to actress Imelda Staunton, who plays Queen Mary's lady-in-waiting, Lady Maud Bagshaw, in the first two films. Asked by the BBC about reports that more Downton Abbey is coming, she said, there will be the final film. There you go.
Did you watch the Downton Abbey, Jill?
Obsessed, yes.
Really?
I loved it. I've watched it. I watched it top to bottom more than once. And there's, I think, six very long seasons.
I never got into it. Maybe one day. One day it's on my list. It ran on ITV from 2010 to 2015. There have been two films now after that. It appears, based on the reporting, that Paul Giamatti will return for this final film. He played Harold Levinson. Anything with Paul Giamatti, Jill, always a solid performance.
You'd actually love it, Moshe, because it's historical fiction. It starts actually with the news of the Titanic sinking.
Okay.
It's great. It covers a lot of ground. It covers a lot of historical events, and the characters are awesome. So highly recommend.
All right. Well, that actually brings us to our next segment.
Yeah, it is Friday. Cheers to the freaking weekend. Time for what we are watching, reading, and eating. Moshe, what are you watching this weekend?
Well, maybe based on that last segment, I'm going to start watching Downton Abbey. We'll see. In the meantime, a couple docs that are out that I'm looking forward to seeing. Disney Plus has a new documentary series from Nat Geo called Photographer, where they highlight some of the most interesting, compelling photographers around the world, including friend of the pod, Paul Nicklin, who's been on with his wife, Christina Mittermeier. Incredible wildlife photographers, award-winning wildlife photographers with millions of followers on Instagram. We did a podcast with them last year. You can catch that on Mo News, the interview. So that's Photographer over on Disney Plus. And then, Jill, I don't know if I want to relive this, but it's certainly getting a lot of attention. Stormy Daniels has a documentary over on Peacock that just premiered recently at South by Southwest and is now available over on the Peacock streaming platform.
I don't know if this is going to make sense to anybody who can't actually see the Google Doc where we write the bulk of our script, but the way you wrote what you're watching, it looks like you say, including friend of the pod, dot, 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 Stormy Daniels. So I'm just thinking, like, is Stormy, have we interviewed her on the podcast?
No, we have not had her. We might be the only media entity that did not interview Stormy Daniels in the last few years. But yeah, it's my shorthand is sometimes difficult to make out. Jill, what's on tap for you this weekend?
Okay, so I'm going to do what I'm listening to instead of what I'm watching. My daughter was the guest on the Kitty Wink podcast this week. So I'm listening to that. If you are not familiar and you have kids, I really recommend it. The hosts, Juliana and Lindsay, they tell a story each week The stories are diverse and inclusive. And then they bring a different kid on to answer questions about the story and play a little game of would you rather based on the story. I'm going to link to it in today's newsletter and also on my Instagram, Jill R. Wagner. Again, it's really cute. And if you have kids and you're looking to pass the time, like in the car, for example, it's a great way to do that. Moshe, I feel like I'm like a stage mom.
Very excited. I'm very excited to hear Alex on the Kitty Wing podcast.
All right, Moshe, what are you reading?
So there's a new book out called American Woman, The Evolution of the First Lady. Katie Rogers is a New York Times reporter and focuses basically just starting with Hillary Clinton through Laura Bush, Michelle Obama, Melania Trump, and Jill Biden. So kind of the evolution of the first lady. We're looking to have her on the pod in the coming week. So I'm going to get into that book. And Jill, it actually comes as we're doing a fun little bracket over on the premium Instagram account this weekend, where we've decided to do a Sweet 16 of presidents facing off against each other, like George Washington versus Ulysses Grant, FDR is in the mix, Eisenhower v. LBJ. And then we'll take them through the championship. So sort of like the nerd history nerd version of the March Madness tournament. And we're going to be breaking down the debate over on the premium account and be doing the various battles. So look out for that as well. Jill, what are you reading?
Moshe, I'm very excited. And I am looking forward to defending a couple of these presidents and making their case. I hope I don't need to debate you, but maybe I'll take someone
else. In some cases, the debate skills don't matter because the presidents, you know, one is clearly going to be better than the other. But in some cases, it really might come down to your argument, Jill. So I look forward to seeing you make the case for a few of these folks. But back to the podcast here, Jill, what are you reading this weekend?
All right. So there's one article from the Free Press. Google's woke AI wasn't a mistake. We know we were there. A few former employees talked to the Free Press. One of them said, I walked around every day at work policing my own actions and language. They say that the culture at Google is broken. Can it be fixed? And then in lighter news, I'm also reading this article from the New York Times. Toddlers smell like flowers. Teens smell goat-like, according to a study. So apparently, two musky steroids and higher levels of odorous acids distinguish the body odors of adolescents and tots. I don't think that's a huge surprise to parents or just anyone who's human, but I am curious what the science is behind this.
Olivia's officially 6 months this weekend, so we're still enjoying the new baby smell, Jill, not the goat-like odor of teens. Yeah.
Yes, you're in the delicious smell phase. And Moshe, what are we eating?
What are we eating, Jill? If you check out a video over on the Instagram account, Jill and I did a taste test on Thursday, care of my wife, Alex, who had a assortment of Hamantaschen cookies from Bread's Bakery in New York. Hamantaschen, our traditional cookie that Jews eat during Purim. It's a three-sided, it's a triangular cookie with various fillings in it. The triangle is symbolic of Haman, who in the Book of Esther, in the story of Purim, was the guy who effectively wanted to kill all the Jews of Persia. He wore a triangular hat. And to honor the fact that the Jews were able to survive all of that, it became traditional to make Hamantaschen cookies, triangular cookies with various fillings. And Jill, we tried some fun ones on Thursday.
Right. So we had five options, which were pretty unusual. And I didn't know how it was going to go. Pizza, fig, poppy, matcha, and chocolate. I think we all thought chocolate was going to be the winner.
Yes.
And it was. But yeah. For me, the runner up was matcha, quite unexpectedly. It was delicious.
You were into the matcha. I was into the pizza because I had no idea. Like a savory Hamantaschen is sort of a new thing. Now, traditionally, there's a lot that come with chocolate filling, apricot filling, usually strawberry filling, like jellies are typically done here. The folks over at Bread's Bakery, you know, trying some a twist this year. So that was a lot of fun. So you can check out that video over on Alex's Instagram account. Her Instagram is A-L-S-A-L-L.
All right, let's close out the week here. Thank you for listening to the Mo News Podcast. If you like what you hear, share this with your friends. It will help us grow. Follow us and subscribe so you don't miss an episode and review us in the App Store.
Yes, and check out our latest interview over on Mo News, The Interview Podcast. It's our newest podcast. Jill, we were tracking all week. We were able to get into the top 40, then the top 30. We were just behind Ted Cruz. An update. We have overtaken Ted Cruz,
wow.
But mainly because Ted Cruz fell in the ratings. We kept our number and then he fell. So I still consider that outpacing. Anyway, no specific issue with Ted Cruz. It just,
it counts.
Yeah, we were like behind Maddow and Cruz, and then eventually they dropped slightly below us. And so it's fun to track in the Apple podcast ratings. But you can help us with that by following Mo News The Interview and making sure that you are alerted to every new edition. It's not like the daily edition, because on the daily podcast, we have an every edition every morning, Monday through Friday. The interview intermittently will probably be 1 to 2 interviews a week. So make sure to follow to make sure you don't miss a single episode.
Yeah, so save about an hour, 90 minutes a week for us.
Another hour.
And even less, again, if you're like me and listen at 1.2 or 1.5, it flies by.
1.5? How about 2x? Can you still understand what we're saying at two times the speed?
No.
Probably not.
All right, everyone. Have a great weekend.
Thanks for listening to the Mo News Podcast.